You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. On Sunday, award-winning photographer Mazandana was shot in the chest by a U.S. soldier with a tank while filming at the Abu Ghraib prison. The area where Dana was shot and killed was crawling with journalists investigating what was an apparent terrorist attack on the prison that is being used by the U.S. for civilian as well as military prisoners. According to eyewitnesses, the driver of the tank fired on Dana after Dana started to photograph him. Stephen Breitner of France 2 television said, quote, "After they shot Mazen, they aimed their guns at us. I don't think it was an accident. They are crazy. They are young soldiers, and they don't understand what is happening," end quote. The Committee to Protect Journalists has requested a full investigation of the shooting. Joel Campagna of CPJ spoke to Peace Watch today about the death of Mazandana.
Well, obviously, we're extremely troubled by Mazen's death, and we are demanding a full and transparent investigation by the Pentagon to determine why a soldier opened fire on an unarmed journalist who was working in an area that, according to the accounts we've read, was quiet at the time. We're certainly troubled on a collegial level. Mazen, as you mentioned, is an award-winning journalist and the recipient of the CPJ's 2001 International Press Freedom Award, so his loss has been very devastating.
And so do you... By the fact that you're demanding or calling for a full investigation, do you accept what the military, their explanation of what happened, that they believe that he had a rocket launching grenade on his shoulder instead of a camera?
Well, you know, I think it's certainly plausible that it was mistaken. And for us, I think the question goes to what precautions U.S. troops are taking to ensure that civilians, and journalists are civilians, are not put in harm's way or are not fired on and killed unnecessarily, as in the case of Mazandana. And I think it also goes to the question as to what the rules of engagement are. The Pentagon says it does not discuss rules of engagement, but there has been certainly concern in Iraq in recent weeks with the deaths of civilians. And I think reasonably we're all concerned about whether or not the right steps are being taken to ensure that journalists and civilians are not harmed. And that is why we are calling for an investigation for, first and foremost to determine as much as we can about why the soldier opened fire on a journalist.
And he was a journalist in the midst of other journalists, was he not?
There had been several journalists in that area that day, according to what we've learned. Some had even been in the spot where Mazandana was at the time he was killed. We know from the account of Mazen's sound man, Naz Shuhi, that they had been operating in that area with the permission of U.S. troops in that particular area at the time. When... As we know, Mazen went to film an oncoming tank. That was when he was shot and killed.
Does this perhaps speak to the chain of command?
Well, you know, I think, again, the first step is to find out what those rules of engagement are and to ensure that that soldiers are taking the maximum efforts to prevent civilians from coming or from being injured or killed. I think that you have, based on reports that you read in the papers, you have situations of soldiers who are very tense, are very nervous, and understandably so, given the attacks that are taking place on a daily basis. But at the same time, there is also an obligation under international humanitarian law that warring parties in a conflict do their utmost to ensure that journalists, civilians, and others are not injured or harmed, and that they do the most to make sure that happens.
So 17 journalists have been killed thus far making in Iraq, which sort of makes Iraq and the covering of this invasion the deadliest place on the planet for journalists.
Yeah, no doubt about it. At this point in time, it is the most dangerous place to work as a journalist. We've seen 12 journalists who have been killed in the line of duty since the U.S.-led war begin in March. Five more journalists, in addition to that, have died in accidents or mishaps while in Iraq. And then we have two other journalists who remain unaccounted for. They had disappeared in southern Iraq in the first days of the war, part of an ITN crew that had come under U.S. and Iraqi fire. So no doubt about it, it's the most dangerous place in the Middle East and the world to be working as a journalist today.
The U.S. command said the soldier mistook the camera for the rocket-propelled grenade launcher. But to my eye, and certainly I'm not a trained person here, they didn't tend to look alike. According to Justin Kugla of The Independent, they were only 30 meters away from the tank. How could he have made a mistake like that?
Well, it's a good question. And what the intent was, you know, is unclear. And, you know, again, I think it is plausible that it was mistaken, perhaps in the eyes of the soldier. But you do raise the point that how does one distinguish between the two? They are different devices. And what security experts who train journalists in hostile environments say is that, yes, these two can be mistaken, a rocket-propelled grenade launcher and a camera, but usually at long distances. And at close distances, especially in this case, 50 to 100 meters, one should be able to distinguish between.
If you can just tell us a little bit about Mazen Dana. We understand he received an award from CPJ 2 years ago. Why was Dana selected to receive it?
Yeah, Mazen was the recipient of the committee's 2001 International Press Freedom Award, which we give out each year to journalists who have demonstrated particular courage under fire in the course of their work. And I think Mazen represented that ideal quite well, working as a cameraman in one of the most difficult and hostile beats anywhere in the world today, that being the West Bank town of Hebron, where he has covered the political violence there for better than a decade, and often at great physical risk. He had been shot and wounded numerous times by live bullets, rubber bullets, had been regularly beaten by Jewish settlers in the West Bank. And he did this job almost anonymously at times. One of the people who record events that we all benefit from as consumers of news, providing a view to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict from the very volatile town of Hebron. And that was why we awarded him that award.
Joe Campagna, Senior Program Editor of the Committee to Protect Journalists. Last Friday, George W. Bush arrived in the Los Angeles area for a meeting at the National Forestry Park in Thousand Oaks. Critics say the trip helped provide a cover for the president's fundraising efforts for the Republican Party so the taxpayers could fund the travel cost. As Bush arrived, his motorcade was greeted by peace activists, students, and teachers who questioned Bush's foreign and domestic policy. There were also many pro-Bush supporters at the protests. Fidel Rodriguez of Pacific Station KPFK spoke to some of them and prepared this piece.
What are you guys doing out here? You in summer right now?
We're patriotic kids. We're about to go back to school in a couple of days. And, you know, we're here to see the president, unlike, you know, causing a ruckus like these people, these unpatriotic people.
Yeah, so what do you think about these people that are protesting Bush?
I think it's terrible. I think you should be in favor of your country. You should support the guy that's leading the cause, and all these people are just bringing us down. They're ruining this great day.
Okay, but have you, like, looked into any of the things
sure,
that they're talking about?
You know, this is supposed to be a joyous day, a joyous occasion where you're supposed to support the guy making the decisions. If any of these people were put in the position to make all these hard decisions, you know what? It's a difficult job. Just because they don't view eye to eye doesn't mean that they have to come down here and ruin, you know, the image of California. When he comes here to visit our state and he sees all these protesters, it just gives us a bad image.
Well, let me throw something out to you.
Let's hear it.
Okay, let's talk about the war on Iraq, right?
Let's hear it.
Okay. Basically, we've already found out from his State of the Union address, based on misinformation given by Tony Blair to him, that there was no weapons of mass destruction.
That's not true. You know, sure, they can say, but if you haven't found it, we're still searching. You know, there's a good chance that there is, and there is evidence. We've seen plans for it. We know that there's plans for these chemical weapons, so there's a great chance.
Are you talking about the plans that Colin Powell laid out?
There's been plans that Colin Powell laid out, and...
But that was already disputed as misinformation.
Well, you know what? You can say it's misinformation all day long, but unless you have information to back up that it's not or that it is, you still out there searching. And, you know, until we do find it or until they give up the search, then you can't say either way.
You watch the news?
Well, yeah, I watch the liberal press, but, you know, what are you going to do about that?
You actually think mainstream media is liberal?
Oh, it's very liberal. It's a very jaded view. I don't know why you're laughing. Have you ever watched CNN?
I think it's very conservative.
Oh, God, you're way off. You ever watched CNN before?
I can't, man. It's like being in the Matrix.
Okay, there you go. Because it's so liberal that you can't. It's ridiculous. I can't believe that you just.
Actually even think that they're being extremely liberal and they're giving a one-sided view?
Most definitely. That's why I watch Fox News. This is a nice little plug. Fox News. It's a completely down-the-line, straight facts. That's where you get it right there.
How old are you?
I'm 18 years of age.
18. And so you're still in high school? You just graduated?
I just graduated. And I will be voting for Arnold.
I just interviewed this kid right now, the ones that just walked by you guys, and I'm also a high school teacher, and I was really saddened to try to have a dialogue with this youth and you know, about the war on Iraq, about Bush. Even we got into something about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's basing his information on Fox News. You know, he's, yeah. Yeah, you know, And I'm hoping that's not a huge mirror of our next generation coming up, but how can we reach, because they're part of America, man, regardless of what we think of their ideology. How do we reach kids like that to let them know that, you know, that there are lies and deceptions that are being perpetuated by this administration, and you can't believe everything? He was actually saying that the media is liberal. I was like, liberal? So, any thoughts on that?
You know, I'm a teacher. I substitute in the LA school district. And I have found that by educating kids, that's one of the best ways. And a lot of these kids really are not listening to their teachers. They're not listening to the full story. They don't realize that Americans started in dissent. I mean, that's what our whole flavor is about. And for them to think that dissenting is immoral and unpatriotic is just a joke. But it's education that's the key, I think.
If you don't have the information, you can't make a good choice,
yeah, exactly,
about things.
Yeah.
Well, as she said, and the really, really important thing is to understand that you try to get as much information as you can, and you do certainly have the right to disagree, to dissent, and it's a patriotic thing to dissent, to think about things and feel if any one thing is not right, that you must speak up and say, this is not right.
Your thoughts?
My children don't believe in the war. I didn't bring them up to believe in war. I was hoping since the Vietnam War that we would prepare for peace. I'm really saddened that we're back in Iraq or Iran or anywhere in the Middle East or causing war anywhere in the world. And
it's like, here we go again.
Here we go again. And I'll be out in the streets until I'm in a wheelchair.
Beautiful. Well, yeah, you were standing right next to these youth. Actually, that was them that yelled.
They'll learn. I'm a Navy veteran. I flew after a Desert Storm as an F-14 pilot. Wow. And I don't know. Interesting, the people in Washington, you know, they call them the chicken hawks. None of the people making the policy really served in the military or actually had to have any experience with the reality of it. So, you know, we know what this is all about is backers and money, and I don't think people are naive. I'm not too worried about the kids. You know, you can't hide the truth. It will out eventually. It takes some patience. It's frustrating right now, but I think eventually common sense will prevail.
One last.
They start issuing the brown shirts for the high school kids. That's what I would learn.
Yeah. One last thing. You guys, what's the hope of the future?
What's the hope for the future? Boy, we've got to work. We need to have people really thinking about what they're doing, and we need to get them away from the television station and get into the books and get into seeing what life is really like. I think that's what Global Exchange tries to do. It's a people-to-people contact, and it's trying to see through reality tours that life is really not just going to Disneyland and you know, having fun. It's work. Freedom is work.
Supporters and protesters outside a recent appearance by President Bush in the Los Angeles area. They spoke with Fidel Rodriguez of Pacifica Station KPFK. Finally, tonight we hear from another peace activist, 68-year-old Dominican nun Jackie Hudson, who was recently sentenced to 2.5 years in federal prison, along with her fellow sisters Artith Platy and Carol Gilbert, who received sentences ranging from 2 to 3 years. Hudson cut through a chain-link fence in northwest Colorado last October and entered the U.S. military's Minuteman III missile silo, wearing white outfits bearing the title Disarmament Specialist and calling themselves the Sacred Earth and Space Plowshares II, the nuns proceeded to hammer on the concrete silo lid, enacting the biblical prophecy of hammering swords into plowshares and bringing an end to war. Several weeks before her sentence was handed down, Hudson spoke to a crowd in Seattle, Washington, about nonviolent action as a force for positive social change.
We're talking about citizenship today. And when we look back to World War II, we say, where were the good Germans? Why did the Holocaust take place? Were there not any folk ready and willing to put their life on the line to stop the trains? And we know now there were. There were many people who spoke out, who did action, who hid the Germans who were being persecuted and targeted, the many thousands, millions that were destined for the gas chambers. But that was in the past. We are now in 2003, and we ask, where are the good Americans? We all are aware of what the situation is and what is happening to our country today. So we say again, where are the good Americans today? Well, I feel we're right here in this room. We have an educated group right here who know the issues, and many of you have risked your lives for these issues. But what about the folks who are not educated to the issues? What about the folks who have the 30-second sound bites that give them all of their information? Well, the University of Maryland did a recent study, a national poll, and they came up with 41% still believed or were unsure whether we found nuclear weapons in Iraq. And 31% either didn't know or were sure that Iraq used weapons of mass destruction against us. Now, this is the information that people have. And where are they getting it? From our national media, from our regular national media. When they were polling the jurors for our trial, one of the questions the judge asked was, what television station do you listen to? CNN? Fox. Those were the major two stations that were listened to. The one man who listened to NPR radio was thrown off by the prosecution. There are many people unaware of the U.S. Constitution. They know it exists, but Article 6, Section 2, I don't believe that many, even of our judges, are aware of that article in our Constitution. I'd just like to read part of it because it is very apropos to what I would like to speak to today. This is a quote. This is Article 6, Section 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, legalese, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the U.S., shall be the supreme law of the land. Well, we have signed many treaties throughout the years. We have ratified them in the U.S. Senate. And they all come to a conclusion that the use or threat to use nuclear weapons would completely be illegal under crimes against humanity and crimes against peace. And yet, the federal courts in this country do not allow any mention of any international treaties or any international law that has been ratified and signed by our government. The UN Charter, which we were most instrumental in forming, that also states all members, this is Article 2, Section 4, all members shall refrain in their international relations from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. Are we still members of the UN? Do we acknowledge that those were mostly our words in that UN Charter? I don't think so. And not only the treaties and conventions mentioned, but the U.S. Army Field Manual, the U.S. Navy Field Manual, and I would propose the U.S. Air Force Field Manual also talks about the use of indiscriminate killing and the illegality of the use or threat to use this type of weaponry. Nuclear weapons cannot discriminate. Nuclear weapons kill combatants and non-combatants. And that's where the evil, the major evil, comes in. Not that I'm saying if it just killed enemy military, that would be good. No, because there are so many overlaying facts, environmentally as well as physical damage to the planet and to humanity. And yet, President Bush explicitly was quoted in the U.S. press as threatening to use nuclear weapons against the axis of evil nations. And specifically, he threatened to use them against Iraq. Well, knowing all of this and having this burden placed on our shoulders, a group of us started meeting. And we started back in January of 2002 in a nine-month birthing process. We sat with the scriptures, we studied the issues, and we developed a plan of action. We were all of Catholic Christian background, so we used the New Testament in great detail, and we also used Isaiah. Isaiah's quote, "They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Well, plowshares is a movement that has been in existence for 23 years now. And what is the commonality of a plowshare action is the use of a hammer and the use of blood. So what we did, we each had gotten our hammers back, received them back from our last action, and we took these same hammers back to Colorado, to the northeastern corner, where the ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missile, there are 49 of them in the northeastern corner of Colorado. One was where we decided to go to, and we decided to go to this particular one because it was high on a hill, visible for miles, on the thoroughfare between I-76 and I-25. Because plowshares don't do their actions in secrecy. Our government was asking people to go to Iraq and find, inspect, expose, and disarm nuclear weapons. So we thought, well, in imitation of that, we know where the U.S. nuclear weapons are. So we went to inspect, expose, and symbolically disarm one of these multi-numbered missiles. So we arrived on the anniversary of the bombing of Afghanistan. So we wanted to bring in as much symbolism as we could as to what was happening in our country and the importance of speaking. We went there to expose the criminality of the U.S. government. So we entered about 7:30 in the morning, cut one link of a chain. And when we started then our nuclear disarmament, we poured our blood that we had carried in baby bottles. And that also is a significance because the greatest victims of war and violence are the children. So we carried our blood in baby bottles and took the top off and poured in the shape of crosses on the top of the silo lid. And we hammered on that. And also on the railroad tracks. Again, the railroad tracks symbolizing to us the railroad tracks to Auschwitz and Dachau and the other gas chambers of Germany. And then we went back on the top of the silo lid and had a liturgy that we had prepared. We're there for about 45 more minutes when we finally saw the first military vehicle. So we were escorted off by the military at that point, handcuffed behind our backs and laid down, face down on the ground for a couple hours. And we're finally taken to Greeley, to the county jail there, and held for 10 days under state charges of mischievous activity and trespass. 10 days, and they dropped those charges, and the FBI picked us up and brought us to federal court in Denver. We were accused of depredation of government property. We went in for the first court hearing, a preliminary hearing, and were told that the grand jury had met, that we were now being charged with 2155, which is sabotage, with 20 years in prison and $250,000 fine. So now the first charge was 10 years. We would have given up on the court system the first day we arrived for our trial, but knowing how the system works or doesn't work, the court system, not the justice system. But because we had given it over to our lawyers, we kept with them and let them do the best that they could in the course of this trial. We were denied every type of defense, even those that we didn't ask for. And so we were found guilty of both counts and face 30 years in prison, $500,000 fine, and trumped up charges for cleaning the site.
Dominican nun Jackie Hudson, speaking last month in Seattle, Washington. She was recently sentenced to 2.5 years in federal prison for her nonviolent protest. We'll have more of her speech tomorrow on Peace Watch. Thanks to Ed Mays and Mike McCormick for production assistance with that piece. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is T from the Pattersons taking the train to Tibet. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adel Hamid of KPFA, Hermes Rivera of UN Radio, and Niamat. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Alex Mitchell at WebActive.com for web help. It's your financial support that makes Peace Watch possible, so we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at pacifica.org. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.